Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. In a few minutes, Dr. Alvin Schmidt will join us. We're going to talk about how Christianity has changed and influenced Western civilization. Now, we're not talking so much here about Christianity's main purpose in the world or in human civilization, which is, of course, to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. And we're not talking about some sort of enterprise on the part of Christianity to conform culture to a Christian ideal. One is the mission of the church, the evangelization of a lost and fallen world. And the other is not the mission of the church to somehow shape culture. But Christianity, like putting that tea bag into hot water, it tends to effuse, it tends to influence, it tends to flavor every place it is found. And Christianity has been found in Western culture predominantly. What has been that influence? What flavor has it left in Western civilization? And would Western civilization be what it is today, or what it has been in the past, were it not for the influence of Christianity? Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Monday on the program, we're going to talk about Mormonism. Bill McKeever will be our guest. We're going to be just running the gamut from what Mormonism is and why Mormonism seems lately to have become, or at least wanted to present itself more and more, like mainstream American evangelicalism. When you think about the influence of Christianity in the world and in society, we generally tend to think America and then back in history toward Western Europe. And that's not a bad place to begin. But in this day and age, we have a foil for our consideration of Christianity's influence in Western civilization. And that foil is the influence of another world religion, Islam, the religion of the Muslim, in the civilizations it has inhabited. Not predominantly Eastern civilization, but Middle Eastern civilization, Asian civilizations. Do you think it's any coincidence what we find in these various sectors of human civilization? How different they are, how differently they think of human rights, how differently they think of women or of family or of marriage. This is not just cultural difference. This is difference born of the influence of the religions that are found in those civilizations. A religion influenced by Buddhism develops out of the world view of Buddhism, and ends up looking very different from one that is influenced by Christianity. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or email us here in the studio. We are coming to you live this Monday, the 1st of August. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. It's another confusion that we probably need to clear up before we start our conversation with Dr. Schmidt is the confusion between Christianity and Western civilization. The two are not the same. Western civilization isn't Christendom, although I think in the past, especially in Western Europe, that confusion reigned. It was up until the time of the Reformation that we had the Holy Roman Empire, which was a fusion of Christendom and civilization, a fusion of Christendom and the state. Well, we live in a secular society, which is not always a bad thing in the United States. Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't. But to be a secular society means to maintain the distinction between Christendom and our civilization, our society, our culture. So that Christians exist in the world, but not of the world, and not certainly synonymous with the world. See, even Christians recognize the distinction between their civilization, their society, their culture, and their church. But what has the church done in the world? What fruit has it borne? As Christians living in their everyday vocations, in their families, in their professions, holding office, making laws, influencing education, what has been the fruit of Christianity's influence in Western civilization? We'll answer those questions. 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. It's popular in America today for Christians to think of America as a Christian civilization. When I think if they stop and consider that for a moment, what they really mean is America as a civilization influenced strongly by Christianity. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's authored the book, How Christianity Changed the World. Dr. Schmidt, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Oh, thank you. I haven't touched base with you for quite a while. Good to hear you.
And it is very nice to hear from you as well. I got to apologize first off to Dr. Schmidt because he's left a number of messages on my answering machine at home over the last couple of months. And I'll just tell you, Dr. Schmidt, meaning no disrespect to you whatsoever, I wasn't answering a lot of messages over the last couple of months.
Oh, I never took it personally, and I kind of more or less surmised that.
Good. I'm glad you were so gracious to me. Some people would want to immediately start to talk about the influence of Christianity in Western civilization, but I want you to start by contrasting. What has been the influence of Christianity in Western civilization versus those civilizations where Islam has held sway?
Yeah, well, there's so many things, and you know, most of the time, one of the things that I discover again and again, Western society has so deeply been influenced by Christianity that we sort of tend to think, and I've heard many people sort of express it, that somehow this is just natural and universal. Well, it isn't. And therefore, your question is very appropriate. If you go outside of the Western world, basically into the Mideast, where Islam is predominant in the Islamic countries, you see a day and night contrast. In so many, many ways, it isn't even, you know, funny, so to speak, in terms of, well, even what we see on television today, even though it is all sometimes strained through the sieve of political correctness, we still see that the life in Islamic countries has very little freedom in terms of what people can say, what they can do, what they can believe, what they can even as women wear. And so the contrast is immense. But then when we look at other examples, the whole bit of sanctity of human life, which is a great contribution that Christianity gave to the Western world. And again, when you see the suicide bombers, whether it's in Afghanistan or whether it's in Iraq or wherever it might be, you can see that the sanctity of life has never been deeply internalized in the Islamic-related country's culture. And so you again see a tremendous contrast in terms of what Christianity has done. And even secularists in our country have basically absorbed these Christian values, but they really don't know where they come from. They're not, as I would say, an outgrowth of genetics. There's basically a contribution that was made to the culture by the teachings of Jesus Christ and then later on by his disciples as they spread, for the most part, into the Western world.
We're not talking here primarily about evangelization or about culture shaping, some enterprise to shape culture on an active basis, but what we're talking about here is Christians in their daily vocations, in the way they think, the way they vote, the way that they govern, the way that they write and educate, all of these things, the way they act in society, having this influence that permeates Western civilization. Where would you go for your first example of the greatest influence that Christianity has had in Western civilization?
Probably the sanctity of human life, which the early Christians brought to the fore so prominently relative to, for example, fighting and resisting abortion. As I have often said to people, you know, until the 20th century and well into the 20th century, one cannot find a Christian who would approve abortion. Now we have major denominations going along with it. The sanctity of human life, the Christians fought and resisted abortion. And in addition to that, they fought and resisted child abandonment. They fought and resisted, for example, infanticide, actually killing infants. And this was very common among the Greeks and the Romans. This was not illegal. It was essentially the cultural law that if you didn't desire a child, and this most commonly involved females, they were summarily either tossed out on the street or killed. And there are many references, for example, when a father who was in the military, the Roman military, would leave for months, would tell his pregnant wife, if it's a boy, keep it. If it's a girl, don't. Kill it. Let me be blunt about it. And that again, the Christians fought, and they brought in these whole sanctity of life, as I said, on abortion level, infanticide level, and child abandonment level, and you might even say suicide. You know, Christians are opposed to suicide, and before long, virtually every country, and we still have certain laws against somebody, well, like Kervak and my name, you know, the doctor up in Michigan, of advocating and counseling people to have suicide. We have only one state where this is legal, namely in Oregon. Otherwise, we can still see reflections of the Christian influence on the sanctity of life as it pertains to suicide.
Before we go to this break with only about 30 seconds, is Christianity's influence outside of Western civilization, or is, let's say, lack of influence outside of Western civilization, kind of proof of your thesis that we have Western civilization such as we have it today,
yes,
due in greater part to Christianity's influence?
Yes. You know, I often say, where, for example, take another example, slavery, which Christianity has often not gotten the credit for removing and abolishing slavery. As I often say, where do you find the greatest amount of evidence for the abolition of slavery? Where Christianity has had a lot of presence or little or no presence? Well, the answer
Let's take your answer on the other side of the break. Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking about the influence of Christianity on Western civilization.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues, Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,500 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues, Etc. Jeremiah Foy, Mayumi Derendinger, Stephen Crone, Jan Melius, Matthew Douglas Peters, Elizabeth Hawks, Wendell Volkens, Aubrey Vickers, Kenneth Mike Hillier, and Pastor Jeffrey Flug. Thanks for your support.
The center of the earth. Now, where is it?
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the editors and writers for the popular Answers magazine.
Did you know the mountains of Ararat happen to be the geographical center of the earth? See, scientists have calculated the point on earth from which the average distance to all other points on earth is the smallest. And that location is thus called the center of the Earth's surface. And guess where they found that point? Over in Turkey, right near Mount Ararat. You know, this makes a lot of sense, since it's where Noah's Ark landed. And think about it. After the global flood, God would have wanted the animals and people to spread out over the Earth. So the best way would have been to have the Ark's animals and people get off the ship at the geographical center of the Earth. By the way, this general area is known as the cradle of civilization. You know, it's so exciting to see the way in which the evidence from around the world corresponds with what the Bible tells us. The ark landed on the mountains of Ararat because God wanted the animals and people to be dispersed throughout the earth from a central point.
Is it possible that dinosaurs were on the ark? Ken Ham presents the answer in his eye-opening booklet, What Really Happened to the Dinosaurs? We'll send you 10 of these intriguing booklets when you send us a gift of any amount. Today's the last day we're offering them, so go to our website, answersoffer.org, or if it's more convenient, go to the phone and call us 24 hours a day, toll-free, 1-888-89-ANSWERS, 888-89-ANSWERS.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the influence of Christianity on Western civilization. Dr. Alvin Schmidt, author of the book How Christianity Changed the World and Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, is our guest. Our call-in number on this Friday, August the 1st, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback at issuesetc.org. You were in the middle of an answer on the issue of slavery. You called the abolition of slavery a Christian achievement. What do you mean there, Dr. Schmidt?
Well, yes, Christianity has not received the credit it's due relative to the abolition of slavery. You know, you still have slavery in Islamic countries, like in Sudan and other areas of Africa and the like. And Islam very much promotes and approve slavery in the Quran. There's no condemnation of it. But if you go to the New Testament, the book of Philemon, only one page long, where, for example, Paul addresses Philemon, whose slave, a runaway slave, was caught, captured, and brought back. And then Paul said to him, treat him no longer as a slave, but as a Christian brother. There you had the seeds of the abolition of slavery laid. Now, granted, I must admit that some of the early church leaders didn't take that passage seriously or weren't even too much aware of it. So some of them had slaves. Some of them, however, didn't. As I document in the book, some Christians released hundreds and thousands of slaves, particularly those who were in power and control to do so. And then virtually by the 1400s in Europe, it was almost dead. Slavery is an issue. Then it was brought back a little later under the British Empire with the importation of slaves to America, for example, and also South America. Well, then in the 1830s, or even a little bit before that, you had, for example, the great influence of Wilbur Wilberforce in England, a former parliamentarian, who fought strenuously against slavery and was successful finally, just before he died, for having the British Parliament outlaw slavery throughout the British Empire. And, of course, he was a devout Christian, used Christian arguments to abolish slavery. So there you can see, again, evidence that people who understood the gospel of Jesus Christ, as St. Paul recommended to Philemon, slavery is not compatible with Christianity. And I might also mention that in the early church, the Christians did not discriminate against slaves. They had them come, they baptized them, they catechized them, they had them come to the same Lord's Supper. They worshiped together. And so, again, you see, Christianity took a very different approach to slavery, although, as I often say, it has not received credit for it by the secular historian for the most part.
DB is listening in his car. DB, thank you for being patient. Welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks. Welcome back, Todd.
Thank you.
I just recently finished Edward Veith's book, God at Work, on Luther's Doctrine of Vocation. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering if your guest could comment on how that understanding of vocation has influenced culture, I think especially American culture, and the way we perceive our work.
DB, thank you very much, and thanks for listening there. The Christian teaching that each man is given a station or stations in life wherein he is to serve his neighbor in love and serve God by faith in Christ. How has this changed or influenced the notion of work and labor?
Well, to some extent it has, and to some extent it still hasn't. We still sometimes think in like medieval times, as before the Reformation, that somehow God evaluates work and gives it status as we as human beings do. Therefore, if you were to become a priest, it was seen as in higher regard. Well, still a lot of people today, even in our secular society, you choose to become a pastor or a priest, they tend to think you have picked a better, more higher status-ranking occupation in the sight of God. Well, that was not Luther's thinking. To Luther, all occupations were equal in God's sight. It was not what you did, but why you did it and for whom you did it that was important in work. And that part has influenced our work somewhat, but as I said, not totally. So in terms of when you read Luther on vocation, there's a tremendous amount of influence that has made its way into our culture and society, but not totally.
People today tend to think of Christianity, even its influence, but especially its world of thought, as being inimical to scientific thought or empirical thought. Has Christianity made influence in the sciences?
Oh, has it ever? I have a whole chapter in the book devoted to that, again, the Christian contributions to science. And to make a long story short, let me just tell you, science basically got underway in the early 13th century, and happened for the most part in England, for example, at Oxford. Grosseteste, for example, who was also a Franciscan monk, became the first chancellor of Oxford University. He had a student by the name of Roger Bacon, who was really a scientist. In those days, they didn't refer to him as scientists. They called him natural philosophers. And then you had, a couple of hundred years almost later, William Ockham, another great, and again, a great individual influenced science. And you move on and you see some of the major scientific people, like, for example, Copernicus, who is often represented in history books and the like, was a canon of the Roman Catholic Church. And when he wrote his particular book of the Revolutions of the Heavenly Bodies, it was not because he was afraid of the church. It was because other scientists he was afraid of would ridicule him. But nevertheless, with Copernicus, you had a German, a Lutheran mathematician who came from Wittenberg and basically lived with him for 2 years and was instrumental in publishing and urging Copernicus to publish his book, and which he did, and was underwritten by Lutherans financially. Then you have also, for instance, Kepler, who was only about 4 months shy of being ordained as a Lutheran pastor, but was assigned to teach in Austria mathematics. And, of course, he gave to the world of science the first three scientific laws. Many of them, a couple of them we are familiar with from high school astronomy, where namely that planets evolve in elliptical orbits rather than in a perfect circle. Well, that's one of his first scientific laws. The other one was that planets, as planets revolve, they move faster when they're closer to the sun than they are when they're farther from the sun. That's his second law. And then there's a third law called the Law of Harmonic, which is a little more complicated, but nevertheless, the first three scientific laws were discovered by Kepler. Now, Kepler was an ardent Christian to his day. When he wrote, for example, just before he died, he wrote his own epitaph. He says, "I used to view the stars from below. Now I will be viewing them from above." And I can go on mentioning a whole host of other individuals. Louis Pasteur, from which we get the word pasteurization. As he died lying in his deathbed, he held a crucifix in one hand and he had his wife's hand in the other. And the list goes on. And most of these people from the 13th century on right until about the 1800s, when you have what is called atheistic materialism, enter the scene. They were all Christians, and they tried to understand and theorize in their scientific thinking on the basis of biblical knowledge. They did not see science and religion as an opposite or as enemies. That's something that came about, as I said, around 1800s and even a little bit into the 1800s. And so for about 500 years, basically, you had a tremendous influence of Christian thinkers, scientists, that brought science, modern science as we have it, into the Western society.
With about a minute and a half, let's talk a little bit about the influence of Christianity and Western civilization with regard to our system of government, especially the philosophy underpinning free democracies and being a nation of laws and not of men, concepts of justice.
Yes. I have a whole chapter on how Christianity contributed to liberty and justice, and glad you brought it up. One of the things that has been overlooked, and then I found and sort of stumbled on it in my research, was the principle that we so much hear about, that we are a nation of laws, rather than a given individual who dictates whatever he wishes or desires, as has been the history of the world for a great deal of time. Well, nation of laws, where does it really come from? Well, it comes from going all the way back to about 390, when you had Emperor Theodosius, the Roman emperor, who overreacted to a riot that was taking place in Thessalonica. And he ended up killing 7,000 people. Now, he, for example, was called on the carpet, if I may say, by Bishop Ambrose, who lived in Milan, and of course, Theodosius had a palace there. And he was a member of Ambrose's church. And Ambrose told him, "You have sinned against God, and unless you repent, I will excommunicate you." Initially, he didn't, but eventually he did. He came with sackcloth and ashes and repented. The point is, he was telling him, "You are not above the law." As far as I can see, that's the first principle of that idea, that concept, making it into Western society. And then almost 800 years later, you had the signing of the Magna Carta in England in 1215, where King John by the barons was forced to sign this great charter, which is what we mean by Magna Carta, again telling him, "You are not above the law." And so we have incorporated these ideas now into the American Constitution and in British common law before the American Constitution, and it is really a quite unique concept, because if you step out of Western society, you still don't see that influence operating, and again, if I may say, in Islamic countries.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is our guest. We're talking with him about the influence of Christianity on Western civilization. When we come back, we'll talk about the concepts of charity and compassion and Christianity's influence on the world of education and learning. He's Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College, author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World.
Christian apologist Gretchen Passantino on the importance of issues, etc.
This is the best that Christian radio gets. And I know that anyone who listens to this show will get sound biblical doctrine and, most importantly, a complete focus on the cross and on Christ. I've done so many radio shows over 35 years, literally thousands of them, and I know of no other program that puts the cross and the gospel right at the focus of everything.
Christ-centered, cross-focused, Issues, Etc.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues, Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues, Etc. on-demand audio, available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org, and click on-demand audio.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
When Helen Ritchie gives birth, the baby will have three mothers. I'll try to explain. Helen has twin sisters, Charlotte and Alex. Alex suffered from cervical cancer, which left her sterile. Here's where it gets confusing, so bear with me. To help Alex have children, her twin sister Charlotte donated her eggs. They were combined with the sperm of Alex's husband, Sean. The tiny embryo was then placed inside Helen's womb. As a result, all three sisters can claim the title of mother. This is the second time around. The first effort resulted in Charlie, who's now two. While I believe parenting is priceless and technology can be a blessing, I question whether this is what God had in mind. Today, Christians should prayerfully consider God's will when expanding their families.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
More minutes in our conversation with Dr. Alvin Schmidt on the influence of Christianity in Western civilization. I'm Todd Wilkin, coming to you live this Friday. It's August the 1st, 1-877-623-MY-IE, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt has written this book called How Christianity Changed the World. You can read an excerpt of this book on the on-demand section of our website, issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. Dr. Schmidt, you mentioned this in passing a moment ago, but let's deal with the influence of Christianity when it comes to the status and the dignity of women in Western civilization.
Yes, there's another thing that's a tremendous contribution of Christianity, not really recognized. Because, you know, if you go to the scriptures, you don't find, particularly in the New Testament, any kind of discrimination against women that, again, if I may use but more point of comparison, that you have in Islamic countries today. Christianity gave women the freedom to choose a suitor, which was unheard of until the time of Christ. Christ spoke to women as he did to men, never derogatorily. And you see, for example, even if you study the early history of the Christian church, as many historians have indicated, they were perhaps often more influential in spreading Christianity than were the men. And Christianity gave dignity to marriage, which really was lacking in the Greco-Roman world. Marriage had become rather a detestable thing. And if you read the Roman poets and writers, you see, for example, that's very much brought out by them. And also you have the practice of polygamy, or polygyny, if you want to say it, was essentially very, very common in ancient societies. Christianity, again, Christ never gave support to polygamous marriages when he spoke about marriage. the two shall become one, not the three or four shall become one, is his word. So monogamy is the only kind of marriage really mentioned and sanctioned and approved in the New Testament. We also have, for example, the other influence that affected women positively. For instance, in India, you had for hundreds of years the practice of sati or sati, widow burning, as we often call it. When her husband died, she is a good and faithful wife. In the Hindu religion, was expected to go on the funeral pyre and be cremated with him. Well, as a result of the British influence by Christian values in 1830s, 1829 exactly, if my memory doesn't fail me, was outlawed, and is outlawed to this day. Well, not only that, you had in China foot binding of little girls that was a common practice. It again, I document in the book how Christian missionaries were influential in finally bringing about to outlaw foot binding as recent as 1912. And so you see another great step that was advanced. The Christian missionaries did not see this compatible with God's point of view. If you go to African countries, many of them under Islamic countries today, is what they practice what's called clitoridectomy or female genital mutilation. Again, Christians, you know, oppose this, and again, it's in contradiction to anything and everything that Christianity in the New Testament talks about the role of women. So women have a tremendous amount, gained tremendously in the Western society, and if we step out Western society, we see that they are by no means on the same playing field.
What about the concepts of charity and compassion, which are kind of woven into Western civilization?
Yes, you know, that's a very interesting thing. You know, the great historian by the name of Philip Schaff in the last century said, the old Roman world was a world without charity. Now, we find this perhaps hard to believe, but again, I found this very, very true. For example, and charity among the Romans, there were two words. One was caritas, which meant to give and do something for an individual for which you didn't expect anything in return. And we get our word charity from it. The other one was liberalitas, where you did something for someone with more, but did expect something in return. Now, the Christians were known for caritas, charity, influence on the basis of what Jesus told them. I was sick and you look after me. I needed a cup of cold water and you gave it to me. So we have by the year 325, the Council of Nicaea, among all the other resolutions that were passed, there was one that was passed that in every particular diocese there was supposed to be set up a hospice. Well, about 40 years later, in 369, you had the beginning of first hospitals built, prompted by the Christian concept of charity. You know, it's very interesting. The brilliant Greeks and Romans did not have hospitals. It is actually, you know, very, almost to use an overused vernacular, mind-blowing. They had no hospitals. It was a Christian innovation. And to this day, many of the hospitals still bear Christian names, like St. John's or St. Luke's or Presbyterian or Lutheran or Methodist or Baptist Hospital, tracing it all the way back. But again, most of us in our society who absorbed all these Christian values do not really know their origin of it, or we, at least we're not conscious of it. So there was another tremendous influence, the bringing about of hospitals. Or if you look, go back to England, the removal of child labor laws, when little children were at age 7 and 8 forced to work in cold, damp, miserable mines and the like. Many of them didn't survive more than a few years and died. Well, again, with a person like Lord Townsend and others, Shaftesbury, the laws were changed. So to this day, we do not permit child labor laws. And again, it's another direct influence of Christian values that took place. As I often say, these were all the influence of Christianity in Western society were byproducts. Jesus didn't give us any formula directions, but they were byproducts of what he taught the people in the gospel. And so they basically wanted to do, I guess, as Jesus said, let your light so shine before men that they might see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. And that brought about a tremendous change in our Western society, much of which we're losing. By the way, I don't know if you heard recently, Paul Harvey gave a prayer that young Graham gave, Billy Graham's son, which I think reflects how we're losing it. If I may have a moment, I'll just quickly read it. Heavenly Father, we come before you today to ask for your forgiveness and to seek your direction and guidance. We know your word says, woe to those who call evil good, but it is exactly what we are doing. We have lost our spiritual equilibrium and reversed our values. We have exploited the poor and called it lottery. We have rewarded laziness and called it welfare. We have killed our unborn and called it choice. We have shot abortionists and called it justifiable. We have neglected to discipline our children and called it building self-esteem. We have abused power and called it politics. We have coveted our neighbor's possessions and called it ambition. We have polluted the air with profanity and pornography and called it freedom of expression. We have ridiculed the time-honored values of our forefathers and called it enlightenment. Search us, O God, and know our hearts today. Cleanse us from every sin and set us free. Amen. Basically, he's lamenting the Christian influence is slowly evaporating.
Finally, then, with only about a minute to respond, Dr. Schmidt, people like the new atheists that are so popular in publishing today often lump Christianity together with Islam, Mormonism, and other religions. And they say that religion has been the source, a net source of ill for human civilization. With 1 minute, how would you respond?
Well, first of all, I would say they obviously don't know the history of Christian influence. That's the first thing I would say, because Christianity has made a tremendous change, as we've been trying to say the last few minutes. It's a simplistic argument that simply doesn't stand up if you examine the evidence. And that's about the best I can say. Take a look at history, and you'll see that that argument just does not hold any water. And not all religions have been given positive influence. Christianity is the one that's par excellence here.
Dr. Alvin Schmidt is Professor Emeritus of Sociology at Illinois College. He's author of the book, How Christianity Changed the World. You can read an excerpt at our website.
If I may get one more word in, if I may.
Please do.
The book that you've just mentioned has been translated into Spanish, been translated into two Chinese dialects, and is coming out at the end of the year in German in Germany.
That is very good to hear. Congratulations, Dr. Schmidt.
Thank you for being
our guest.
You're welcome. Have me again, and I'll be pleased to be with you.
Happy to do it. You can read an excerpt of this book, How Christianity Changed the World. I'll tell you, when people read this book, they've heard about it through this program, they say, this is amazing. It's compendious. It's encyclopedic. It is educational. How Christianity Changed the World, on-demand section of our website, issuesetc.org. Now, be sure to tune in next week to Issues Etc. We have got some great topics. We'll talk about Mormonism, Chinese religions, and human rights related to our topic from this afternoon. And we'll review the best-selling book, The Shack. If you've seen this out on the bookshelves, The Shack, its author, he claims in this fictional way to have encountered God. He wants to entertain people with his fiction, but there is a worldview embedded in this enjoyable fiction, The Shack, as well. We'll talk about it next week on the program. Now, the Christian does more than influence, of course. But what has it been? Has it been to the world's good that Christ's church has been planted here? If only in its influence, in the ways, the thoughts, the government, the learning, the compassion of human civilization, it has been a net good. But Christianity has something much better than influence to offer. It has Christ himself in his word, forgiving sins and bringing life and salvation to sinners like you and me. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.